Oh my gosh. I could listen to this all day. That's percussion heaven right there. Tito Puente and Bongo Santa Maria teaming up for 6 fantastic explosive minutes of pure electricity on a tune, if you could call it that. It's just percussion called Tito and Bongo on Timbales. It's from Tito's 1956 album, Puente in Percussion. Legendary percussionists Willy Bobo and Carlos Patato Valdez complete the roster of the Big Four on this album, as does bassist Bobby Rodriguez. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we are continuing our discussion yesterday. We get a little bit of help today from none other than the President of the United States, who helps make a very important point. And, of course, we will open up the phone lines because yesterday I kind of monopolized the conversation. It happens from time to time when I think I need to stretch out and get a point made. So today we will also make up for my dominance on the airwaves with your reactions to yesterday's discussion. We were talking about the Bernie Sanders revolution and the Democratic Party, what happens now, and what the remnants, if you will, the party that he dumped, the movement that he abandoned, and is now recruiting into the fold of the Democratic Party, or at least attempting to do so. What happens? And I made the case yesterday that the most significant development in this political period right now is the very movement that Bernie Sanders abandoned. It actually has the greatest leverage at this point, although people are not seeing it that way. But I see it as having an extraordinary opportunity here to galvanize itself and to literally change the face of politics for all time. I know it sounds almost like an exaggeration, but I do not feel it to be an exaggeration. It had and continues to have, in my view, the ability to have such a transformative impact. It is sad that it was publicly executed by none other than its leader, and he has to pay a price for that. The price for that, I think, is to publicly denounce him, to publicly sever ties with him, to publicly declare his association with this movement to be null and void, and they have to reconstitute themselves. But they already have achieved something, I think, here. And what they achieved is power, the power to make a change independent of the established power elite. It's an extraordinary movement. And we see this in the context, again, of movements that had come before and similarly were destroyed at the hands of the people supposedly leading them and at the behest of the organized political world. Jesse Jackson, Dennis Kucinich, Barack Obama, all of these movements followed the same template. And it is not too late. This is not to say that I expect that this movement could win in the sense that people think of winning. But I see it winning at accomplishing critical objectives. It's winning. It could still win in accomplishing these critical objectives. Top of the list, to me, is injecting into a flabbergasted electorate, a disappointed electorate, an abandoned electorate, the idea that they are worth a fight. they're worth the effort to protect their political interests and to advocate in their behalf. Secondly, it is an extraordinary effort going up against an established political order. And they're gaining ground. And they're gaining ground by galvanizing all these pockets of resistance, seeing the logic of coming together rather than to feed into the business of, you know, I'm over here with my thing and you're over there with your problems and the other person is over there with his concerns. No, they began the process, and this is very exciting. And even though they are climbing Mount Everest backwards, this is hard work. And even though they really were betrayed by their leader, I don't think that they need to give up at all. I think they need to continue. Interestingly, we have today some instruction from the President of the United States on the legitimacy of the point I was making just yesterday. But you will see the irony here. The President today at a news conference at the White House was asked a question about Donald Trump, whether Donald Trump's candidacy is legitimate and should continue. And he had a very profound answer. And I thought, this is exactly the explanation for why movements, independent movements, need to continue. Because we are in a political moment. I don't recall that it has been like this any time recently, in recent memory. But it is, I mean, the political sphere is so odious. It's so objectionable. It's so bad. The choices being given are so wrong, and it is an insult to anybody even talking about, quote, democracy, unquote. What we as the electorate are asked to do, to make a choice, to make a choice, and what we are given as choices. So I thought I would share with you the incredible instruction. And I think he might have been listening to the program yesterday, and he said, you know what, we need I need to share my wisdom with the Lead Stories audience. So this is President Obama speaking, of course. He's directing his observations and his advice at the Republican nominee, Donald Trump. But you know we're going to come back right after this and pick up from where he left off with his instruction to the nation.
The Republican nominee's recent comments about the Khan family and his statement that if president, he would consider recognizing Russia's annexation of Crimea, does it make you question his fitness to be president?
Yes. I think the Republican nominee is unfit to serve as president. I said so last week, and he keeps on proving it. The notion that he would attack a Gold Star family that had made such extraordinary sacrifices on behalf of our country, the fact that he doesn't appear to have basic knowledge around critical issues in Europe, in the Middle East, in Asia, means that he's woefully unprepared to do this job. And this is not just my opinion. I think what's been interesting is the repeated denunciations of his statements by leading Republicans, including the Speaker of the House and the Senate Majority Leader and prominent Republicans like John McCain, And the question I think that they have to ask themselves is, if you are repeatedly having to say in very strong terms that what he has said is unacceptable, why are you still endorsing him? What does this say about your party that this is your standard bearer? This isn't a situation where you have an episodic gaffe. This is daily and weekly where they are distancing themselves from statements he's making. There has to be a point at which you say, this is not somebody I can support for President of the United States. Even if he purports to be a member of my party. And the fact that that has not yet happened makes some of these denunciations ring hollow. I don't doubt their sincerity. I don't doubt that they were outraged about some of the statements that Mr. Trump and his supporters made about the Kahn family. But there has to come a point at which you say, somebody who makes those kinds of statements doesn't have the judgment, the temperament, the understanding to occupy the most powerful position in the world. Because a lot of people depend on the White House getting stuff right. And this is different than just having policy disagreements. I recognize that they all profoundly disagree with myself or Hillary Clinton on tax policy or on certain elements of foreign policy. But there have been Republican presidents with whom I disagreed with, but I didn't have a doubt that they could function as president. I think I was right and Mitt Romney and John McCain were wrong on certain policy issues, but I never thought that they couldn't do the job. And had they won, I would have been disappointed. But I would have said to all Americans, this is our president, and I know they're going to abide by certain norms and rules and common sense. Will observe basic decency, will have enough knowledge about economic policy and foreign policy and our constitutional traditions and rule of law, that our government will work. And then we'll compete 4 years from now to try to win an election. But that's not the situation here. And that's not just my opinion. That is the opinion of many prominent Republicans. There has to come a point at which you say, enough. And the alternative is that the entire party, the Republican Party, effectively endorses and validates the positions that are being articulated by Mr. Trump. And as I said in my speech last week, I don't think that actually represents the views of a whole lot of Republicans out there.
Okay. You listen to the President of the United States saying these things, and you wonder whether you're in a twilight zone. And then you get confirmation that it is not that he doesn't know these things. He actually is articulating these things. But in no way, shape, form, or fashion is he connecting all of these things, these high-minded principles and ideals and these standards that ought to inform the conduct of the presumed president of the United States, or a person trying to be president of the United States with the person he just endorsed and the person he's campaigning for. He is mad about what Donald Trump has said. And the question is, well, aren't you equally concerned about what Hillary Clinton not only has said, but what she has done and continues to do? By your standard, Hillary Clinton should not qualify at all as the standard bearer of the Democratic Party. You wonder, see how politics works? Here's a woman who has been eternally at the center of all kinds of investigations, criminal investigations, and she continues to be, she and her husband, who presumably, if she wins this presidency, he will return as the co-president of the United States. It's a twofer. We have every reason to be suspicious of a Clinton candidacy and to reject it. We have every reason to be concerned about the standards of the standard bearer. But you heard the president. It's Trump. Trump and what he's saying, these awful things he's saying. He has not yet made any policies. He has not yet implemented any policies. But Hillary Clinton has, and they've been devastating. They've involved the deaths of tens of thousands of people. She's a Democrat, after all, and the president is a Democrat, so he conveniently sees the world through the prism of the Democrat. He can't apply the very same things he just said to justify why the Republicans ought to reject their own candidate. He can't seem to apply the same rules or the same standards to the current Democratic candidate. Isn't that interesting? And this is why I say the movement, independent movements, I don't care what kind of movement you have, you are perfectly fine in articulating your own agenda. And it is fine that you would go up against the standing elite. It is perfectly fine. Because these are the crazy double standards that have been operating all along. And this is, we are stuck in the middle. We're supposed to believe that Barack Obama has a perfectly sensible and independent view, that he's looking at this thing in a non-judgmental way, in that sense, a very, very independent way. And he's got, I mean, the election, there's still questions about the election fraud, the voter fraud that was happening. We see emails convincing the public that it was rigged. The whole process was rigged to favor Hillary Clinton, and she can't make the case that, oh, I didn't know anything about that. That was Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and I'm very upset about it. Yeah, but you still benefited from it with your fingers on the scales. This is what we've got. The President of the United States becoming intentionally ignorant to the world, and in doing so, is actually making, again, he is trumpeting, pardon that pun, he is advocating for a very undesirable person to be president of the United States by attacking Donald Trump on his lack of principles. Yeah, I listened to this morning. I said, no, somebody in the room, somebody who is, you know, somebody who has his interests at heart, some PR person should say, you know, Mr. President, What you are considering saying could be used heavily against you and your party and your standard bearer. You shouldn't go out there attacking Donald Trump and say he's unfit to be president, because nobody fits that description more than your current standard bearer, Hillary Clinton and her partner, Bubba. But I'll open up the phone lines at 888-874-4888. Let's talk about our discussion yesterday and incorporate today's instruction on standards from the president as to why Donald Trump is unfit and why he needs to be rejected by his own party. And here we have the very high-minded Bernie Sanders telling people how fit Hillary Clinton is. And that's the basis on which he is throwing his support and throwing everybody under the bus in support of Hillary Clinton. You see how sick this whole scenario is and why it is important for you to have your own mind. Because if you follow these people, you should also assume that they're playing with your brains. They're playing games. The president of the United States, the same thing was said about him. Hillary Clinton said the same thing about him. He's not fit to be president. He doesn't have a handle on world affairs. He's not ready for this job. He requires on-the-job training. This is what she said. But now there's a lot of love going on. It's a love fest. And Bernie Sanders, who talked about all these things that matter, including character, and the one thing that Hillary Clinton fails spectacularly at is character. And now the president at the White House is having a news conference to tell the Republican Party, to instruct the Republican Party to cast off its own candidate when he should be doing exactly the same thing to Hillary Clinton. She should be let go. Quick. 888-874-4888. Right after this short break, we'll come back to your thoughts. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and your thoughts about where we are with respect to independent movements, especially the revolution that up until last week was being headed by Bernie Sanders. And we have instruction, some really interesting irony riddled instruction and opinions expressed by President Obama about why Donald Trump is not fit to be president of the United States. We go to Edgewater. E, you're on the air.
How are you today, Eutrice?
Fine, thank you. How about you?
I'm doing okay, I guess. Just it's very frustrating when you see what's going on here and we keep just like having fun with it, I guess. I don't know. But this is all par for the course from what I said before. It's like a one-party system acting as a two-party system, and they're all working together. And just like I said, Bernie was working for her, Trump's working for her. They just want to make it close, make it look believable, if you could call it believable. And this is how they have it all set up for Hillary to be the president. Because if you listen to her speech Thursday, and I don't know if anybody else heard this besides me, because I didn't listen to the speech. I happened to be walking past the radio, and I flipped it on, and she was about in the middle of the speech, and she said, Donald Trump says a lot of things, but he doesn't say how he's going to do the things. And then she started naming the things she was going to do, and she got to ISIS, and she said, we're going to fight them from the air, and we're going to support the troops on the ground. So it seems to me she's already got the war machine going, even though we're 100 days before the election. And it's sad, but it's all about war and killing, and they think they need to eliminate 4 billion of us, and it's how they're going to do it. And we can say all these things, it's just a tragedy.
But But isn't it also offensive? I mean, at a particular level, it assumes that the people are just so stupid that they can't make sense of the fact that they're being played. You know, that they're just the objects. They're the people you fire all these ideas at, and something will stick. And you play with their minds every day. And this is exactly what is going on in the name of politics, people playing with your minds, which is why I'm saying the battle is always for your mind. But you seem to have a handle on Hillary Clinton and the hawkishness of Hillary Clinton. And by the way, Barack Obama, the peace-loving guy, at least that's what he says, until you look at the record, you see the dichotomy here. Here's a person who's extolling her virtues. She's a mother, she's a grandmother, whatever, but she has no problems killing other people's mothers and grandmothers.
Exactly. She's a maniac. There's no word to describe her. She makes Hitler look like an altar boy. This is a serious situation we're in. It's not funny. We can make all the jokes we want. Donald Trump is a person, but right now he's playing the part that he played on TV. He's a celebrity, and he's playing his part to the T. This is what he's friends with Hillary. They're all friends up there. We already know about these things. It's a disgrace. I don't know how it got so corrupted. Even George Bush Sr. wasn't keeping it a secret 20 years ago. He was president for 4 years. How many times did he say it's the New World Order? About 100 times every year he said that. The New World Order. They brought down the trade centers. Who benefited? They loved it. Giuliani became the hero. George Bush Jr., he's the most blatant maniac I've ever seen in my life. He does whatever he feels like. He doesn't even try to keep it a secret. Look what he does.
But the point is, the people have apparently very limited ways in which to put these folks in check. And this is why I'm saying the one good thing that has happened here is that independent movements are sprouting up, and they are indicating that they are wise to the whole plan. And they are moving in a whole different direction. So that is very, very, very positive. Those are very positive developments. Thank you so much for calling.
I agree with that. Let me just say I agree with that, and I hope something good comes out of it. But I think we have to take this into our hands more and just try to do something between the people that don't want these things to happen, that the other people that our fellow human beings seem to be so in denial of, that they just don't want to know the truth. For 50 years, we've been trying to convince them that it wasn't Lee Harvey Oswald, but they'd rather have that. They're comfortable with that, because to think that our own government would do these things to us is scarier than if terrorists do it, because we can go beat up terrorists in faraway lands, and we don't have to mess with our own country. And we can just make believe that what's going on is real and true, and we're going to beat everybody up, and then they go about their day, and that's the best they can do.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for letting me say all I was trying to say.
Thank you so much. Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Hi. Good afternoon, Utrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family.
Thank you.
No, I have to admit, I watched absolutely none of what transpired last week. The only information I received was what I saw online, and that was only snippets. But as I talk to people, believe it or not, people's clarity is becoming crystallized, because many people recognize that what transpired with Hillary and this whole email situation, you know, we have gone to war when we tell people that we're going across the world to promote democracy. All of a sudden, people are now beginning to say, but wait a minute, what just came out of WikiLeaks in this email? That's not promoting democracy. And, you know, I heard a couple of things that Bernie Sanders said, and if you closed your eyes, you would have thought that he was talking about someone that he had not campaigned on for a whole year. You would have thought that he was talking about somebody new, because what he said about Hillary was completely antithetical to what he had said during the campaign. And so people are watching this, but more than that, people are reacting to this. And I would have to agree with you that the Democratic Party is not clear where their support is going to come from, that they have African Americans in their pocket. Unfortunate as that is, that's probably the sole demographic that they can count on. But she really can't count on anybody else.
What do you think about the little snippet we heard from President Obama this morning as to why Donald Trump is unfit to be president of the United States, the reasons that he gave?
Well, I have to tell you that I watched the whole press conference. It was about the TPP. You know, he was addressing questions from the press corps with the president of Singapore there promoting TPP. So I heard that. And I said to myself, you know, if my memory serves me correct, and you can correct me if I'm incorrect, but that's exactly what she said about him 8 years ago. As a matter of fact, what she said about him was that he would need on-the-job training. And
correct.
Would you want his hand on that red phone at 3 a.m. in the morning? Am I incorrect about that?
No, that's exactly what you said.
Oh, that's what I remembered. And so as I heard him talk about Donald, I said to myself, isn't that what she said about you?
It makes you wonder. These folks must think so poorly of people that they can, you know, just extract these pieces of information and present them as a cogent thought without even suggesting that these things apply to them at a different time and in a different way. Hillary Clinton said exactly the same thing about him. He was a poor, poor choice for all the reasons that he just said Donald Trump is a poor choice.
And more than that, he needed on-the-job training.
Absolutely, he needed on-the-job training. Do you want a president who needs on-the-job training? He's never been in these circles of power. He doesn't have what it takes. He doesn't have nerves of steel. He just can't handle this job. And here's a president repeating the same nonsense about Donald Trump. And in not only attacking Donald Trump, but attacking Donald Trump in behalf of a person whose character is perfectly up for question.
My other concern on why African Americans need clarity. When Hillary Clinton said Netanyahu did not punish Hamas enough, most of those killed in those raids were women and children. And I say to people, African Americans need to put themselves in the position of the Palestinians, because as far as I'm concerned, they're the Palestinians of America.
No question. No question. Thanks, Patricia, for your call.
Have a good day.
Thank you. Delaware. Emilio, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello.
Hello?
Get clarity.
Emilio, are you there?
Yes.
I'll be getting some muffled sounds from you, Emilio.
Okay, I don't have my phone on, but I'm hearing the radio, the lady that was just on. I'm hearing her voice on my phone.
It's very, very hard to hear you clearly. So maybe you can try again, and let's see if we get a clearer line, okay? Ma'at, from New York, you're on the air.
Oh, yes.
Hello?
Yes, greetings to you, Eutrice, and the PR and family. Everyone stay well and healthy. Okay, I couldn't get in on Friday, which I was dying to. But, you know, in connection to this, I think that what we have here is what's called the PSYOP. When your choice is basically between a neo-fascist and a neoliberal, there is no real choice, okay? And we need to look at it as being very intended, and even possibly Trump, as it were, being the controlled opposition in that I didn't follow the Bilderberg proceedings this year because I wasn't listening to that Patriot Radio. But they're the ones, I mean, we're really dealing with a shadow government. They're the ones at Bilderberg who anoints the incoming president, and they control those efforts behind the strings. I also want to share that
I want you to get as specific as possible with the subject at hand. What do you think of Bernie Sanders, because we have to get back to that a bit, Bernie Sanders and how he ought to be treated now by the movement that supported him, now that he has asked for everyone to join the Hillary Clinton bandwagon? And secondly, what do you think about the president's speech this morning, this little piece of information about why Donald Trump needs to be rejected by his own party?
Well, as for Bernie, I sort of feel that he's between a rock and a hard place, you know. But I do hope that he continue, because he made some, I mean, you know, the platforms don't necessarily mean very much, but he and Cornel West, with a few others, made some significant changes in terms of language. We're doing away with the death penalty at the federal level, which is significant because Clinton, during his tenure, got in both the crime bill in 94 and then the, expedited death penalty, anti-terrorism, et cetera, et cetera.
But so let me ask you on this question. Was the intention from the very beginning, either by Cornel West or by Bernie Sanders, was the intention really to make the Democratic Party a better party, or was the intention to spawn an entirely different alternative movement? Should we be happy about the fact that they managed to insert some planks into the Democratic Party platform that supposedly reflect the thinking of the left of center people? Or is it something that we should be scared about, really, that even the people who are in leadership capacity do not understand, A, the party planks and the party platform are just suggestions. They're not enforceable. They're not legally enforceable. It's not a legally enforceable document. It's mainly a statement of philosophical commitment, but it's nothing more than that. And B, was that their job? Their job was to tend to this burgeoning movement and to give it some lift. Their job is not to go and fix the Democratic Party.
Well, you know, I can't speak for motives. However, I think there is some significance to that. And then what you get in this system, okay, is a system of shadow government operators behind the scenes. And any pushback, I feel, is significant, but we have to stay on top of it. And, you know, really, really push for significant changes. Now, this is the first time we're hearing language around, and Hillary said, oh, I'm going to change the criminal or reform the criminal justice system from top to bottom or from A to Z.
But we heard that before. Her husband did that. It was called
exactly.
criminal justice reform, and it produced the largest prison population on the planet, which he belatedly apologized for. Or he thought it might have gone a little too far, he said. But meanwhile, millions of people are affected. So, you know, when I hear of, you know, well, they got this, the Democratic Party to incorporate these planks, who cares? The point is that your job is not to fix the Democratic Party. It is unfixable. The job at the outset was to construct a healthy alternative, not to sit down and help them be more efficient at doing the things that they've been doing to the detriment of the majority of people, to construct an entirely different way. If the Democratic Party wanted to be fixed, let them go to hire consultants and pay for it. They do not need to get there and talk about, oh, we're going to indulge in some kind of a fantasy that they're doing good stuff by helping the Democratic Party come to terms with itself and be a better party for the people. Ridiculous. That tells me that as sophisticated as you supposedly are as a political person, you really don't get it. You just don't get it. Thanks, Mott, for your call. Emilio, you're back on the air.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
Oh, no problem. Hello. I think what happened, the engineer said it, he thought you might have had the speaker on, and that was why we were getting so much feedback. But glad to have you.
Right. Well, thank you. I'm a first-time caller, but I listen every chance I get. First thing, as far as the speech that you played from Obama, yeah, I kind of agree with you. I think it's kind of hollow in terms of that there's really no morals, no ethics. Both parties are corrupt. So when you hear someone speaking like that, as far as I'm concerned, it really doesn't mean anything. It's just a, kind of a show. In terms of Bernie, I was a Bernie supporter, and I am an independent. I was a Democrat for most of my life, but I kind of left the Democratic Party a few years ago because I felt that they didn't have any backbone and that they were a weak party. But now I know that they're corrupt, too. And I think that the thing that Bernie did for at least me and my family and the people I know, he's exposed the Democratic Party for what they really are. They're corrupt. And, if nothing else, now I know that I'm not going to waste my time with the Democratic Party. I'm going to seek something else. And right now, that something else seems to be the Green Party for me.
Well, let me ask you about the Bernie effort, though. You were a Bernie supporter, and you had, I imagine, you had an idea that this was going to be something different, refreshingly different, that actually respected your brain and respected your political choices. What happened to you, or what was going on in your head the night Bernie Sanders stood up there at the Democratic Convention and enthusiastically embraced Hillary Clinton and basically made a direct appeal to the people who were with him to switch to the Democratic Party?
It was a total sellout. I am not going to back Hillary Clinton. I am not a Trump fan, but I'm not going to go with Bernie on this. I kind of agree with Cornel West, and I just think that we cannot continue down the same path. And it's the fear. The fear is coming back, and they're trying to get everyone afraid of Donald Trump. One other thing, I kind of go out on the internet, and I visit probably 20, 25 sites a day. They are kind of left, center left. But I noticed that everybody's jumping on Trump. And just like they made Trump, a candidate, a viable candidate, now they're so negative against him that they're trying to get everybody on Hillary, to vote for Hillary. And I think it's going to have an opposite effect. Even on me, I'm thinking I'll probably vote for Trump. If you're telling me he's so bad, and the alternative is Hillary Clinton, maybe what you're telling me is I should vote for Trump. At least that's the way I feel, and I'm not a Trump fan. And like I said, I've been a Democrat all my life, but now I'm starting to look at Trump and say, well, maybe he is better than Hillary. So
well,
they got to be careful.
I was hoping that
I
somewhere there would be a movement that says we should postpone elections until there is some degree of comfort with the authenticity of and integrity of these elections. We have way too many signals, especially on the Democratic side. We have way too many signals that it is a rigged system. I mean, even Trump talked about on the Republican side of a rigged system, and there is no question about a rigged system. We have massive voter fraud occurring that has been documented. We have machines that mysteriously failed to report many, many votes. Some machines that are functioning in some parts of a state and other machines that are not functioning in other parts of the state. We have massive voter fraud. We should do what was just done in Haiti, where an electoral commission said we will postpone elections because there are really too many indications of wrongdoing. And then we will start from scratch.
That's a good idea. I've never heard that, but I like it. I mean, I didn't know Haiti did that, but I like that idea because I just don't trust, you know, I just don't trust either candidate. I don't trust the parties, and that's really the saddest commentary I guess I can make is that the party that I supported for almost 60 years, I have no confidence whatsoever in it.
So for the immediate future, what are you thinking you'll be doing?
Well, right now, everyone that I can talk to that I can try to at least maybe get them to open up their eyes and their ears to see that there are other candidates besides these two. Because sometimes when I mention, for example, Jill Stein of the Green Party, they look at me and say, Jill who? So it's obvious to me that people they're not aware that there are other candidates, A, because they're lazy, and B, because they probably just don't have the time or don't have the interest. But, you know, I spend most of my time just trying to tell people that there are other people out there, and I do tell them to think about the Green Party, because although I don't think that they will win unless something miraculous happens, at least, you know, I believe we need to build. And I think we need to start somewhere, and since change is incremental, you know, we need to do this, and maybe, you know, don't do the Jesse Jackson thing or the Dennis Kucinich thing where, you know, they're there and then they're gone. I think that the Green Party's here to stay, and I just think that we need to build support. So that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to spend my time, A, just letting people know that there is another party out there, and B, that, you know, I want them to vote their values and not vote because they're afraid, but to vote for the people that they want to vote for. And if Trump or if Hillary wins, it's not their fault. You voted your values, the person you wanted to see elected. If that person didn't win, okay. If someone else wins, that's not your fault. And I don't believe that I need to carry the weight of the world on my shoulders because I voted my conscience. And I think that people try to put that on you also.
I think you make an excellent point. Thank you so much for your call today. Great talking with
you. Thank you, Therese.
Thanks.
You. Bye.
Julie from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I had made the decision before Bernie made his announcement that, to quote Jill Stein's T-shirt, it says, I won't vote for the lesser evil, but for the greater good. So, but to follow up what you said earlier about the leverage that the Bernie supporters have,
Yes.
You said that we could change the face of politics for all times.
Yes.
And I think if we did that, if we focused on the power that we have, that we can change the face of politics for all times. And I was out in the street.
We're hearing there's a phone off the hook or something.
Oh.
Okay. It's gone.
I was out in the streets last week, not in the official convention, and I heard Chris Hedges and Shama Sawant speak, and they tried to convince Bernie not to run on the Democratic ticket, but to run as an independent, but they didn't convince him. So I've been listening to them and following them very closely. And just before your show came on, I got the about the last 10 minutes of Gary Noll, and he was speaking about Jill Klein, and he referenced Chris Hedges also. So for your listeners that could go to Truth Dude and see what he has to say, and I believe that by following that, at least that's what I'm doing personally, I am going to vote for the greater good and not choose between the lesser evils. So I just wanted to mention that. And I think if half of the Bernie supporters were to do that, I think we could make a significant statement to the Democratic Party, because the only way to they should be punished, and they should know that that we are going to fight. And as Chris Hedges says in his writings, it might take a decade. It's going to be a long fight. It's not something that can be done overnight, but we need to make the statement and make the most of our leverage now. So,
well, you see, I think this is a very important moment, and I've been stressing that we need to embrace this moment, because it is filled with meaning and instruction. And if we take some time to understand what the moment is trying to tell us, we could actually change the course of political history using the moment that we're in now. We are clear that we have reached a point of no return with regard to the faith and trust in a political system. It is not working. It has not been working. It will not work except for the power elite. So I think that is pretty much widely accepted. But more importantly, this moment, I think, has begun to convince people that they're not small and insignificant, that they can actually make a difference in their own lives by themselves, and that they have the power to leverage the influence that they have in their own behalf. They can do this. The Democratic and Republican parties, as big as they are, as long as they've been in existence, are scared at the moment. They are having conniptions. They don't want to say this publicly, but they understand that there has been a turning point. This is a turning point. And they can't vouch for what the respective parties would be like in the future, because people are turned off. They have gotten the message that they are organized systems organized against the interests of people. And at some point, they will be pushed aside. They will no longer have the same monopoly over the vote that they enjoyed all this time. And they can't fool the people anymore. People they're awakened. So this is a great, great moment of instruction. And people just have to slow down a little bit and absorb all the lessons that they are supposed to be learning in this moment in order to fashion an intelligent way of moving forward. I think that's the beauty of the moment.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you so much for what you do.
Thanks so much, Julie, for your call. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes, Utrice, kind of took my thunder. I was going to talk about the same thing that you just talked about. But as I see it, for example, you ask about President Obama's statement. There's no way that he doesn't know all the controversy about Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation and the things with the emails and whatnot. And he's a master at playing the game. He's so great at it. He's so smooth. He's so articulate. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, there's absolutely no future in the Democrat and Republican Party for the people. These are the parties of the ruling class, the elite, and they're not just going to give up and turn things over for the benefit of the masses of people. They're going to continue doing as long as they can what they can for the ruling class that lives here. I was reading the Times this morning, and I couldn't, well, I didn't doubt it, but I read an article about the Ukraine that Hillary Clinton was intimately involved in, and it, the Times sound like the propaganda forum or a newspaper for the government. I couldn't believe the things that they left out of the story. So, you know, the people don't understand, most of them, that these parties will get you nowhere, and this is a system set up to benefit the small ruling class that is at the top of Everest.
Very much so. But it did occur to you how ironic it was that the president was articulating these views.
Oh, yeah, he's convincing so smooth. He's wonderful
at that. The Republicans to dump their candidate. I thought it was extraordinarily insightful.
Oh, yes.
Thanks, yes. David, for your call.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure. Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. And that is why you always have to have your brain in gear when it comes to politics, because that's really the prize. The prize is your brain. When a president could get up there and say with all the seriousness everything that he said that applied not only to him, but certainly applies doubly to his the standard bearer for the Democratic Party, and not blink an eye, you go, well, we see what your problem is. You no longer are in our world. You are in that world. And so you have to do everything possible to maintain your brain, because that's what the prize is, to infect our brains with their way of thinking so that we're all controlled and we all think the way they think. And the way they think is not good. Obviously, it's really not good. But thank you so much for your calls today and for participating. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Infectious Myth with David Crow. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories, at gmail.com. And let me know what you think about the program. A pleasure always and a great privilege to be in your company. We see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.